Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Okay, why is this not on? Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highlands of the north, the Safety Wars for Tuesday, October 1st, 2018. How's everybody doing out there? No. Sometimes we have to restart things. Let's start this again. The streamers are kicking in right about now. So, a little bit late on those suits. Everybody is having a great time, great day here. In the Northeast, we are dealing with the beginnings of fall. So that means that we have a lot of holidays here, especially if you are of the Jewish faith. We have Rosh Hashanah coming up. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I don't know if we'll be on the air or not, but we will see with that. Big news today, I mean, I've been keeping up with this all day, is what's going on right now in Israel here. So this started out, and what you try to do is, like with all these things, again, I'm not a military person per se, but I do have had a lot of training in disaster response to terrorism and things of that nature as far as disaster preparation. Just went through a month of disaster preparation commentary here. And one of the things that they always teach you in all of these classes, all of these programs, is a multi-vector attack, meaning that you're going to have a couple of things going at one time, especially if you're using terrorism at a tactic to try to confuse things, to try to overload the system, to try to do whatever. Sort of like the whole rules for radicals things, where you want to keep the pressure on. So very early this morning, first news that came out was 7 murdered in Haifa, a terror shooting. No, it's spelled Jaffa, J-A-F-F-A, but pronounced Haifa, as far as I know. territory, many more wounded. 7 were murdered and 17 were wounded and to varying degrees. The 2 terrorists were shot dead by security forces. And this was like first thing in the morning this came out. So 7 people were murdered and dozens were wounded in a terrorist shooting attack in a light rail station in Haifa on Tuesday evening. Right, so evening their time. So it was like mid-morning our time here. 6 people were, that's on the East Coast of the United States. 6 people were taken to a medical center with at least 2 in critical condition with head wounds and others moderately to seriously wounded. 12 wounded, including a child, were transferred to the Wolfson Medical Center. 5 were in serious condition. So we heard that, and then about an hour later, right, it was like the people who have been dealing with this stuff, their career, have been watching this. We were like, hey, what's next here? So you have a mass shooting, and then about an hour or two later, we got the reports that there was a missile attack on Israel. The official word, and we're going to go to voanews.gov here. Again, I had to restart everything once we kicked in here. Voice of American News. Israel says Iran's rulers made a big mistake in large-scale ballistic missile attack. Now, just to let you know, VOA News, right? Not only did Sammy Hagar write a song about this in the early 80s, VOA, right? Voice of America. That's actual a real thing here, and it's the official news service of the United States to foreign lands. But we are allowed to use it. It's open source. It's by the government here, so we're appropriate. We're going to be using it here. Israeli, and this is a story, Israel says Iran rulers made a big mistake in large-scale ballistic missile attack. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Iran's Islamist rulers had made a big mistake by staging a large-scale missile attack on his nation Tuesday and warned they will pay for it, quote, end quote. The Israeli and U.S. officials said Iran fired about 200 ballistic missiles at wide swaths of Israel after nightfall on Tuesday. Most were intercepted by Israeli forces, aided by warships from the U.S., Israel's main ally. The attack was a major escalation of the year-long conflict between Israel and everybody else. Videos posted online showed some of the Iranian missiles striking the ground in Israel while others landed in neighboring Jordan. There is no immediate reports of Israeli casualties. Since this happened at night, I imagine they're going to be waiting till the morning until they find out what exactly is going on there. Netanyahu reacted to the Iranian assault in a video statement that he made late Tuesday while addressing his cabinet, saying the Islamic Republic's leaders in Tehran have not understood Israel's determination to retaliate against its enemies, but they will understand, he added. Hours earlier, Iranian President Mossad Pezeshkian, sorry about that, P-E-Z-E-S-H, Pezeshkian, posted a message on the X platform saying Iran had given a decisive response to the aggression of the Zionist regime, a pejorative for Israel. This action was in defense of the interests and citizens of Iran, let Netanyahu know that Iran is not a belligerent but stands firmly against any threat. Do not enter into a conflict with Iran, he wrote. U.S. President Joe Biden, speaking Tuesday at a briefing in the White House, said, at my direction, the United States military actively supported the defense of Israel. We are still assessing the impact, but based on what we know now, the attack appears to have been defeated and ineffective. Biden said the thwarting of what he called Iran's brazen and expected attack was a testament to Israel and U.S. military capabilities. And he added, make no mistake, we support Israel. And going on with this, this is all because Israel invaded parts of Lebanon, they said. Didn't call it an invasion, but it was a skirmish for that strategic kind of thing to rout out some missile launching sites. But essentially, that's what's going on there with in Israel. So we're waiting for the other thing. The IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, says their Air Force remains fully operational, and now they vow Jerusalem will not stand idle following the barrage of 200 missiles fired across the country. Tehran says fully prepared for any retaliation. So they're saying, the article says 180 missiles. Oh, whatever. It comes down to that. One of the commentators had said today, and I think this is a very, could be pretty accurate. After what happened to the Hezbollah leader in Lebanon earlier this week, it stands to reason that Iran had to do something, because remember, even though they are an Islamic Republic, they do answer to somebody, to the support of leaders who answer to somebody. Usually they're, the population there. And essentially what they're, essentially they have to show some response. So did they launch these missiles in the hopes that they were going to be shot down? Because now they can say they did something. I don't know. We'll figure that out in the days to come. But basically the world is on edge here with this. Now, with bated breath, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but no, this is one of those things that, in my opinion, Jimmy Polzel's opinion, this is like World War One, like I was discussing with my wife. This could have easily been prevented. And this is stupid that we're doing this. Same thing with Ukraine. It's like, what the hell? Now we have a long, drawn-out war there. I don't know if that's in our strategic, meaning the United States or the West, best interest to be involved in. I don't know. And I'm okay with saying I don't know, because you have these talking heads saying, well, yeah, we got to do that. We got to do that, blah, 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 blah. We got to protect Ukraine. And you got the others saying we can't have anything to do with Ukraine. And I don't think we've gotten an adequate response from the powers that be as to what's going on there with that. And now, and I feel bad for the Ukrainian people. Remember, we covered on February 13th, I believe it was February 2021, we had Imogene Salva talking about my family and her family's experience with dealing with the Soviet Union. And we understand how brutal that is. And apparently Russia is still doing the same stuff 80 years later, right? Over 80 years later. So I get it. I don't think we're on a very good pathway here. That's my opinion here. Now, what can we do about this? Preparation. And we're going to talk about that, even though it's October 1st. We're still going to talk about disaster preparation, because I have a feeling we're all going to need to get our stuff together here the next few years. Game on, right? And go out there and be prepared with all different types of stuff. Now, going onward with Hurricane Helena, right, going through there, now people are getting, are starting to get to the point of what is going on there. So we have some cell phone shot video here, smartphone videos that are coming out from these rescues and everything else, a lot of really messed up things going on over here, to say the least. The rescues, and now, coupled with the Eastern Seaboard and Gulf of Mexico port strike, again, the perfect storm here with this, and we're already having a possible tropical depression right now that may be following up on Florida early next week here, dumping more rain in that whole area. Now, there's been reports of people slashing tires of trucks, because that's like the only thing that, and they're like emergent truckers, right, delivering supplies and things of that nature. I only read a couple of, and they were legitimate from legitimate news outlets, mainstream news. I haven't heard too much about that. Now, Also, what I want to point out here is now we have a run on basic supplies between the hurricane ravaged areas and everyone else on the East Coast. So there's been reports of toilet paper, a run on toilet paper again. I don't get it. I mean, during the pandemic, I mean, there was a, I mean, I know, I had ordered paper towels over the, through Amazon, and they were the same price as toilet paper. We got like a whole case of toilet paper, and everyone's complaining, what are you getting all this toilet paper for? I ordered paper towels, but they delivered toilet paper. And I said, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And sure enough, a week later, no toilet paper to be found in Rockland County, New York. So I was like, yeah, it was a mistake, but it was a fortuitous mistake with toilet paper. Now, apparently, that's going on again now. So here we go. Toilet paper. Again, I had to restart everything. I had this all lined up. Paper shortage. Let's see if we get some mainstream news here. All right. Strike. This is from WYRK out of New York. This is Country 106.5. Strike could cause shortage of this in New York. Back in March of 2020, right before restaurants, schools, and other local businesses closed their doors due to COVID-19, New Yorkers were scrambling to gather everything they needed to stay indoors for the foreseeable future. Now, my mother, right back then, she pointed something out. In February, there was all the toilet paper sales in all the supermarkets. Why did my mother notice that? Because mothers notice that sort of thing. And that was coupled with the supply chain was getting all fouled up, right? And commercial delivers of toilet paper, right? Their supply wasn't disrupted, but everyone else was because they weren't in work. And according, and I have it on very good authority here because I know some custodial engineers out there. They told me, look, that they were running low. They always have run through a lot of toilet paper, not because it's a public rest room, but because the people steal toilet paper. I said, you got to be kidding me. People are stealing toilet paper. Jimmy, people are stealing toilet paper. Really? Yeah, really. But, you know, and so now they couldn't steal toilet paper because they're under lockdown. So thousands of New York State residents went from store to store in panic trying to find the necessities they needed, and one item in particular was especially difficult to find. We don't mean to sound the alarm bells, but there are a huge possibility that could happen again. Beginning Tuesday morning, 12:01 a.m., thousands of dock workers along the East Coast who are essential for getting goods into the United States walked off the job, citing the need for better job security and higher wages. I'm going to tell you this much. Okay, I don't have the complete context here, but this happened in the Wayback Machine. We got to go in the Wayback Machine to the early 2000s, 2002, and on the West Coast, where the union members did not get a lot of sympathy because in California with their thing, right? And here, let's do this. Average. Average. Pay of longshoremen in New York. So, according to A, and this is from CBS News, how much do dock workers make? Roughly 25,000 striking dock workers at ports along the East and Gulf Coast are rallying for higher pay and stronger guardrails around their jobs being automated out of existence. So only workers at 14 Gulf East and Gulf Coast ports are on strike. West Coast longshoremen are represented by a different union, which negotiated for a different type of thing. So let's go down here. Pay for longshoremen is based on years of experience. Under the former contract, which expired Monday, starting pay for dock workers was $20 an hour. That rose to $24.75 after 2 years, $31.90 after 3 years, and topping out at $39 for an hour for workers with at least 6 years of service. The union is demanding a 77% raise over 6 years, or the equivalent of $5 increase per hour for each year of the contract. But basically are essential workers. So right now, the top-tier hourly wage of $39 amounts to just $81,000 nationally, but dock workers can make more on by taking on extra shifts. For example, according to 2019-20 annual report for the Waterfront Commission of New York, about one-third of local longshoremen made $200,000 or more a year. So a more typical longshoreman's salary can exceed $100,000, but not without logging substantial overtime hours. Daggett, the ILA president, maintains that these higher earners work up to $100 a week. So across the industry, including non-union jobs, pay for some dock workers can be more modest at around $53,000 a year, according to the job site Indeed. This is from CBS News. So that puts it into a little bit of context here. Now, I think this article from CBS News Money Watch by Megan Cirillo and edited by Elaine Scherter, dated today at about 5:30, puts this into a little bit more context here. Because often people think that they're union workers, they're bringing in the money. They're doing a... Not necessarily true, because they're tapped out at $39 an hour, but look at the hours that they got to go. And I have family members that have been in this industry, long hours, brutal hours, on the water, and everything else with this. I mean, it's a hard job, $39 an hour. In the New York area, $39 an hour, that's $81,000 a year base salary. Not going to get you much, because the minimum for a modest lower middle class lifestyle in this area, $81,000 ain't guvno. I'm going to tell you that. Especially if you're a single wage earning family unit. Yeah, not a lot. So I see it from those points of view. The danger that we have here with this strike is that for the longshoremen, is that stuff is automated. It's going to be automated here. That's what I see going on here eventually. So be interesting here. May you live in interesting times, as the Chinese curse says. Now, how does this impact us? Fruit, like I mentioned last night, a lot of anything that comes in on the ships, fruit, anything from Europe, they're not going to go around the Cape of Good Hope or through the Suez Canal. They're going to be parked right out there along the along New York Harbor. Come to think of it here, let me go to commercial break, and there's one thing I want to show you folks that we'll see if we can get it on here. I have the app for it. I don't know if they have an actual real website. So we're going to go in here, and here you go.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Want to avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe? Let's dive into the General Duty Clause. The General Duty Clause, Section 5, A1 of the OSHA Act of 1970, is a catch-all rule to cover unregulated hazards. Employers must keep workplaces free from recognized dangers that could cause death or serious harm. For OSHA to cite you under the General Duty Clause, they must prove the following four things. 1. The employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2. An employee was exposed to that hazard. 3. That hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4. Feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly or working without proper support. Stay proactive. Monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Posel and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents, conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Okay, so here I have, this is from marinetraffic.com, and I believe this is fair use, so I'm going to go with it. So all of the ships out there with a transponder are located on here. So if I zoom out here, I'm zoomed in on New York City. I know you're looking at this. You're not looking at this on Safety FM, the audio portion here. But here you have all of the ships basically in the world you are looking at. And some of the websites, this isn't the only one. I don't prefer one over another. I really have no use of this except for curiosity where things are. So we have all different types of traffic here. So here I'm centered in on the lower New York Bay here, and we have ships all over here. So I am at Staten Island right over here, and all different boating things. You have the Grander, all different, and this is here in this little harbor here. I have centered. That is basically a marina, the Great Kills Park there. I'm somewhat familiar with this because I grew up boating this area as a kid. And then we have Fort Wadsworth, and we have pilot ships here over here. Now, if we go over here, this section here, this is over by Bayonne, right? We see Bayonne. This is the Jersey City area. This is the former military ocean terminal here. And we have one ship in there, and that is the Mein Schiff. Yes, I'm not kidding you. Mein Schiff, which is probably a German vessel. Here, that's moored over there. And that is over there is also the where the Teardrop Memorial is, to September 11th. And in Bayonne, we have the Conquest, and we have the Captain Dan. That's over at the IMTT terminal. And going here, Martin Explorer over at IMTT. IMTT is very large, right? Terminal. And those are most likely oil tanks. We have other ships here. And let's see, and we're talking about Port Newark. Usually this is loaded up with ships here. And right now, where I'm highlighting way in on the inlet, that normally is the smaller ship area with the tugboats, things of that nature, support vessels. You have some of the other ones. Here is a dredger, J.P. Bosseau. I have a picture of it here. I'm familiar with that boat. There, and here we have the Chesapeake, which is another dredge here. And we have the Kirby Moran. Those are all tugboats here. With that, probably the moving around stuff. And those are the Moran tugs. And this is all pretty interesting here. And you're not seeing any major ships here in Port Newark. They sent them all out. And here we have Port Elizabeth. Now, in this area, Port Ivory over here in this area, I was on a project to remove 21 pipelines in that area in the mid-2000s there. Here we have David Winslow. That is a tugboat. William Brewster, right? But if you look here, this is usually all loaded up with ships here, right? They're not there now. They moved them out last night. Here we have at the Bayway Refinery. What do we have? We have the Trinity, which is a crude oil tanker. To my knowledge, the crude oil, the oil business was not, or is not impacted by this. I might be wrong on that one, but that's what's going on there. And if you look here, earlier today, there was ships all over the place here with here. And there you have the Grimaldi lines. Shout out to my friend John Grimaldi. Eurocargo barge, that was, I don't know whether inbound or outbound, looks outbound according to the map. So what's my point in going through this? You could track a lot of different things here with marine traffic. It's all publicly available here. We have several cargo ships off the coast of Long Beach over in, off the coast of Long Island here. I think from what I've heard, they're just hanging out there waiting for what to do. So, again, for every one day this stuff is delayed, and one day it takes anywhere from, I've heard estimates from 4 to 8 days, more commonly 6 days, to get back on schedule here. So if this goes more than 2-3 days, again, it's going to add on a week of stuff, essentially, of bad situations. And if this goes much longer than that, now we're talking about a major disruption here to our economy, because one-fifth, reportedly, of the one-fifth of the U.S. economy is goes through the East Coast ports here. Now, my question is this. Let's go down and see how this has impacted the here. Oh, and of course, we got the ads coming up because I did not pay for this. So let's go down to the Gulf Coast. Okay. Wow. So we're able to see what's going up the mighty Mississippi River and some of the other rivers. We actually have the U.S. Oh, I didn't know that. The Comfort is over there. U.S. Navy hospital ship there. I didn't know what it's doing, but stuff's all backed up here. Here around the New Orleans area. I don't know if these are supposed to be there or not there. I don't know. But I know they're doing their recovery work just out of curiosity. So there's a lot of stuff. And if you are a Star Trek fan, let me try this. How do we spell? I know I'm spelling it wrong. So here, I'll go. Almost.
the Kobayashi Maru is currently over in Uruguay. So, Argentina. So, yes, the Kobayashi Maru. If you're a Star Trek fan, you know what I'm referring to. So that's what I got on that. So what do we do? As always, there's going to be supply disruptions. Anything coming on, be prepared for that. So your staple items I would go into, because I think people go and get, because I think, but don't go nuts. Because, we don't want to cause a shortage or panic. But if you have a couple extra bucks to go out there, I would go out there and get it and prepare a little bit on this. So we're going to continue with some OSHA news and views, and we're going to get back to you. Let's go to our next commercial break.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzo, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
I'm sure you've heard the news. Safety training is evolving, and you should be too. Outdated safety training isn't just boring, it's dangerous. If your safety trainer is still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety from 25 years ago, it's time for a change. Imagine safety training that actually addresses the hazards unique to your workplace. No more generic, one-size-fits-all solutions. The Safety Wars team at SafetyWars.com is here to revolutionize how you approach safety with customized training that's relevant, engaging, and effective. Contact Jim Polzel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. Say goodbye to outdated safety training and hello to a safer, more productive environment. Visit SafetyWars.com now. This is gonna blow your mind. There's a new daytime talk show on your local cable access station. What happens when safety, scandal, and heartbreak collide? Welcome to Safety Wars, the talk show. Today's episode is a doozy. Imagine confronting your unsafe supervisor who just happens to be your ex-wife's new hubby. Talk about a powder keg. But wait, there's more. We've got an exclusive interview with a corporate exec who's taken out life insurance policies on his riskiest workers, hoping to cash in on a deadly mishap. Yup, you heard that right. It's a real-life plot twist you can't make up. Tune in as Jim Posel, CSP, our very own Jerry Springer of safety, dives deep into this explosive confrontation. Sparks will fly and secrets will be exposed. Catch the full episode on Safety Wars on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Don't miss out on the drama that could save your life. Like and share now, and stay safe, folks.
Okay, we are back.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
All right, so here we go. Now, we talked a little bit about preparedness here. So OSHA issued an alert today on specifically the preventing carbon monoxide poisoning while working with portable generators. Working with portable generators can expose workers to carbon monoxide, CO, a colorless, odorless, and toxic gas. Follow these work practices. Inspect a generator for damaged or loose fuel lines. That's actually happened. I've seen that happen where a fuel line ruptures. You get oil and gasoline all over the place, and, gasoline, and it lights up. Keep the generator dry, maintain and operate it according to manufacturer's instructions. Do not use a portable generator indoors. Generators should be used outdoors and never place a generator near doors, windows, or ventilation shafts where CO can enter and build up. And make sure the generator has 3 to 4 feet of clear space on all sides. And if you or others show symptoms of CO poisoning, dizziness, or headaches, nausea, vomiting, tiredness, confusion, and unconsciousness, get to fresh air immediately and seek medical attention. Do not re-enter the area until it's determined to be safe by properly trained people. So that's what they have to say with that. Okay. Department of Labor restructures OSHA regional offices and creates a Birmingham region to improve operations in Arkansas and Louisiana. U.S. Department of Labor's OSHA has completed changes to restructure its regional operations and created a new region to better protect workers and educate employers. So these are the list of the new regions and the previous regions and where their headquarters are. Newly created Birmingham regions will be overseen by certain social leaders. What their rationale is in restructuring this is a lot of states out west have their own OSHA, namely California and Washington with that. And what they're saying is, well, maybe we need to restructure. And since they have state programs, we don't need to have to oversee them, but we need to concentrate our resources otherwise. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing on there. We'll see on this here. And this is the same thing, OSHA regional offices here. And merging San Francisco, Seattle regions to improve operations. That's what OSHA is doing also. And here we have U.S. Department of Labor and New Jersey Department of Labor Strategic Enforcement Initiative combats illegal child labor. The U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division and the New Jersey State Department of Labor and Workforce Development have launched a joint strategic enforcement initiative to combat violations of federal and state child labor laws. Preventing violations involving children working in dangerous jobs is an urgent priority for both agencies. Officials in Washington, D.C. and Trenton are focused on industries with a history of noncompliance with existing laws where vulnerable workers are less likely to file complaints with federal or state agencies. This approach augments each department's existing compliance-driven enforcement actions. At the wage and hour division, our priority is protecting the most vulnerable workers in our country. Our children, said Wage and Hour Administrator Jessica Lumen. We will use strategic enforcement innovation and every available tool to hold any employer who tries to profit by using illegal child labor accountable. Since 2019, the U.S. Department of Labor has seen an 88% increase nationwide in children employed illegally. In fiscal year 2023, federal investigators identified 955 child labor violations with 5,792 children at risk, including 502 working in hazardous occupations illegally. And going on. Now, let's see. Here's my comment on here. What's happened since 2020 here? What have we had going on here? Economic upheaval. Huge illegal immigrant population coming in, regardless what your opinion is on this. We're not allowed to call them, though. We have to call them migrants. Okay, fair enough, migrants. You know, want a more positive spin on things. However, the law still refers to them as the illegal immigrants. Now, this is what it comes down to. Maybe if we had better economic conditions, perhaps we wouldn't have so many children working. and dangerous things. And the other thing is this. The workers that come over, the migrants that come over, they don't know what their law rights are. How many of them are working under the table? How many children are working off the books or under the table? Maybe under an assumed alias. Remember, I'm used to dealing with people from Eastern Europe. Believe me, they have assumed aliases. There used to be a dude years ago rumored to be in Passaic County, New Jersey. He had 20 names and 20 social security numbers, and he would rotate people out from Poland and Eastern Europe and assign them those numbers, and then they'd leave, and then a new 20 more people would come over and use those numbers and names. One of my clients had proof of it, and they were forced to manage that legally, of course. But anyway, I'm getting a drink of water here. So I'm clicking on people, right, they said the departments, and this is from 2022, they're talking about reducing labor costs. The department, and this is Department of Labor, New Jersey, first strategic enforcement initiatives focus on two industries, commercial laundromats and multi-unit residential construction. Commercial laundromats predominantly employ women immigrants who are often fearful of reporting wage theft and other workplace violations. In residential construction, worker misclassification has become embedded in many business models. Yeah, no guvno there. These targets follow months of research and were selected to make lasting industry-wide employment. So, construction and laundry. How about fast food? Because we're seeing in a lot of this stuff, when I read these news releases, fast food places. With that, what are the dangerous jobs that children go into? Dangerous jobs that are off limits, and this is from the Department of Labor, DOL.gov. And we always hear meat processing and slicing, but here we go. Federal law, not allowed to do meat processing or slicing, power-driven working woodworking machinery, compactors or balers, forklifts and skid steers, logging, forestry, and sawmilling. Now, you may say, well, every test that I take related to forklifts and skid steers say under 18, you have to be over 18. And this is where it comes from, is from this law here. Power-driven bakery machineries, working with metal. So I guess that has to do all those 18-year-olds and younger than 18 that used to be working in machine shops can't do that. Power-driven saws, that eliminates carpentry. Roofing, mostly because that's working at height here. Brick and tile, radioactive material, mining, demolition, and trenching and excavation. Not allowed to do it by federal law, and states often have other restrictions on those. So, yeah, we're doing this. We're doing everything here. Okay, the next story is we have to go back to my camera, and you get to see me again. Hello. All right. Rise, and this is from the U.S. Sun. New HIV diagnoses on heterosexual men and women in England have surged by over 30% in the last 2 years. Probably because everybody's having a great time that they're now out of pandemic lockdowns. And I noticed this was, in my sphere of people, I ask, are you really, what you're doing here? Think about it, right? Because I know some people have gone nuts. They're out of the pandemic lockdowns. They're like, nope, hey, let's have a great time. I had pointed out back in 2010, as my departing message from the people I worked with politically, that once people have time to think, and once people have time to contemplate and to reflect and everything else, they're going to realize that they're screwed, that they've been screwed, and there's going to be hell to pay. I think this is an outgrowth of that. People, you know, lock people up. It's sort of like what I've heard from prisoners that I've worked with, former inmates, for ex-cons. They said once you're in prison, the lights go out. Often, especially if you're in a minimum security prison, let's say, or be any prison, solitary, you're alone with your thoughts. This is what happened here with this. People are alone with their thoughts. They said, what the hell am I doing? I'm working in the service industry, busting my rear end. I have no capacity. They didn't use that word, but that's what it was. No capacity, no resilience to change my life. I'm stuck. That's where you had people starting to take online courses more often, from what I've seen. That's when you've had people say, you know what? I'm not going to be in the service industry. I'm not going to be doing this. I'm not going to be doing that. I'm only going to do what I want, and I'm going to work towards that. In part, that's why Safety Wars is here. Always wanted to do broadcasting. So here we have a situation where people were all pent up, locked away, not allowed on the streets. And now we're shocked where HIV diagnosis among heterosexual men and women in England has surged by over 30% in the last 2 years. People are letting loose. People are doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing with this. Aren't thinking, taking risky behavior with this stuff. Like, I should be one to talk. I'm not judging. I'm just saying what this is. Experts are uncertain why cases are rising, but suggest better access to testing may be a factor. Okay. It is the second consecutive year that heterosexual diagnoses of HIV have outpaced those among gay men. Experts say this indicates more action is needed. Maybe less action is needed to reduce the new different kind, and to reduce new HIV diagnosis among heterosexuals. Charities fear the aim of ending new cases of HIV in England by 2030 is now at risk. The latest figures reveal the new diagnosis in England jumped by 15%. What's the age group? Do they mention the age group? They're looking for you. For men exposed to HIV through sex with women, the number of new diagnoses first made in England rose by 36% from 445 in 2022 to 605 in 2023, and rose by 30% from 602 to 780 among women exposed to the virus through sex with men. Rise in cases was steepest in ethnic minority heterosexuals, with a 45% rise seen in this group compared to the previous year. In 2022, heterosexual diagnosis of HIV surpassed those among gay men for the first time. HIV diagnoses in England among men exposed to sex with other men rose by 7% in 2022. And in 2023, ethnic minority men experienced a 7% increase, while white men saw a 3% rise. Although there is much to celebrate with treatment and prevention and everything else, it's all, you know, I don't know, just the way it is. What's going on here? California passes a law protecting your brain data. So California has amended its Consumer Privacy Act to include protection for brain data. Users will get opt-out of neurotechnology companies selling or sharing their data and can request to see what data a firm holds, limit the data, or demand correction or deletion. It's an important first step, but federal and global legislation is needed to ensure neural data is protected worldwide. Amendments to California's Consumer Privacy Act now include neural data. Again, Colorado, not the first state in doing this. I mean, your medical data is your own. This is very controversial here with this. James Bond, eat your heart out. An incredible 454-foot mega yacht has an underwater dining room, a 32-foot blue hole pool, and a 40-seat theater, but it comes with an eye-watering price tag. The idea of underwater dining room may sound like a concept from the latest James Bond blockbuster, but it could soon become a reality thanks to Dutch designers. Now, imagine going, you know, off the coast of Coney Island with this thing. You'd have, you know, amazing views of nothing but Coney Island whitefish there. Yeah, and you can look that up, what that is. You know, and other garbage and everything else. I don't think that that's where this would likely be, but it would be pretty cool, you know, for about 5 minutes. Concept dubbed Inspire features an underwater room that offers a panoramic view of the oceans. And what's more, the lucky people on board will be able to enjoy a sauna, a 32-foot blue hole, and a 40-seater theater. While this exact loss, you know, cost is yet to be confirmed, assumingly size A-plus yacht belong to Manchester City owner Sheikh Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan, reportedly costs about £333 million to build. I don't think they had their thumb on the scale on that one. But anyway, pretty cool idea. I don't think I'll ever own one. Maybe nice to visit. No, if they want a safety audit on that, I could do safety audits there. And we would have to get the full experience of it. Sort of like when I did that at Universal Studios in L.A., I was tasked to do lockout, tagout compliance and all the rides, me and Greg Ertl from BBL. And they gave us free passes in the park. And after work every day, we went to ride rides because we had to do research. How do they work? What are we doing work on? That's all I got for tonight. A quick night. We're going to do the outro and then we're going to do our regular patriotic songs here, and we'll go from there. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. Wanted to thank you for listening and viewing here on the streamers. We'll be posting the streamers very shortly here. And let's see, do I have? No, I don't have. Okay, I'll find the American flag here in a minute here. So I'm using a different platform to record video today because I haven't been happy with the other platform. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.